Good afternoon. My name is Philip, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Abortion and the Women of Color conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Jodi Jacobson. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you so much, Philip, and thanks to everyone for joining the call. We really appreciate it. This is a very timely issue and one, as Loretta will tell us, even more timely given things going on now in the Georgia State Legislature. As you all know, we're talking today about the effort by anti-choice advocates to use race and eugenics claims, false race and eugenics claims, to actually limit the choices of women of color, which is part of a broader campaign to limit the choices of women per se, both in reproductive and sexual health. We've got three incredible speakers, and I'm going to introduce them briefly right now because I want them to have the time to speak and you to have the time to ask questions. Just say at the outset that two of our speakers, Dr. Gilliam and Dr. Collins, have to leave a little bit early at 2:45, so we really do want to get the call going off. Our first speaker is Loretta Ross, who is a major leader in the reproductive justice movement throughout the United States. She's national coordinator of the Sister Song Women of Color Reproductive Health Collective, and she's the founder and former executive director of the National Center for Human Rights Education. I'm really appreciative of the fact that Loretta could join us today because she is in the middle, really, of all of these issues in Georgia and Atlanta and has been really, really busy with them lately. We also have on the call Dr. Melissa Gilliam, who's a professor of obstetrics and gynecology and pediatrics at the University of Chicago Medical Center. She has extensive experience in reproductive and sexual health issues and also is a board member and former chair of the board of the Guttmacher Institute. And then last but not least, of course, we have Dr. Vanessa Collins. She's vice president for medical affairs at Planned Parenthood Federation of America, and is responsible for leadership and administration of the Medical Affairs Division. She also has extensive clinical and administrative experience in reproductive and sexual health and a long and extensive career history in these areas, including as vice president and medical director of Engender Health, which works internationally on reproductive and sexual health. So with that, I want to invite Loretta to open the call with her remarks, and then we'll move on to Melissa and then to Vanessa. Thank you so much. Loretta? Yeah.
Thanks for having me on the call. Well, let me start with a little bit of history. About February 5th or so, about 65 billboards started mushrooming around the black communities in Atlanta with a focus on the West End, claiming that black children are an endangered species. These billboards were sponsored by Georgia Right to Life, who hired a minority outreach director named Catherine Davis, and they apparently were designed by an outfit calling itself the Radiance Foundation, committed to ending abortion, both organizations, in the African-American community. They really were the opening salvo because right after the billboards appeared, then legislation was introduced in the Georgia legislature, House Bill 1155, claiming that abortions based on race and sex selection are happening in the state, and House Bill 1155 would criminalize providers, abortion providers, who perform an abortion if they had knowledge or even suspicion that an abortion was being obtained because of the race of the father, the fetus, or in any kind of race reduction strategy. So that's the broad outline. That situation compelled Sister Song, working with Planned Parenthood Federation of Georgia, Spark Reproductive Justice Now, Sister Love, which is our HIV Women's AIDS organization, and Raksha, which is a South Asian domestic violence organization here in the city of Atlanta, to quickly form a coalition to respond to both the billboard campaign and to try to stop the legislation. The legislation itself has moved through both the subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee and now is being heard before the full Judiciary Committee. And the third hearing on the legislation is scheduled for tomorrow, March 10th, at 1:30 p.m. at the Georgia Capitol. So that's an overview of the facts of the situation. Now, we suspect that there are all kinds of motivations behind the campaign. First of all, it is very hard to persuade African-American women in the city of Atlanta that this legislation, headquartered or headlined by rural white Republicans, is truly about saving black or South Asian children. These are the same legislators, when we look at their voting records, that have fought against improving our schools, getting guns off the street, getting children in the SCHIP program. I mean, these are not people whose votes indicate that they care about children of color once they're here. So we think that there are several motivations behind the campaign. First of all, it is the cynical use of communities of color to enact in Georgia a ban on abortion that would cause providers to have to interrogate women who come for abortion services as to their motives. And that would be done for the first time in the history of the state. No provider today, who are actually good defenders of women's rights, currently ask a woman, why are you seeking the abortion? And they consider that the woman's business. And even if they did have reason, knowledge of why the woman is having an abortion, they considered that an issue of patient confidentiality. So to be required to ask the woman why she's having an abortion and risk the potential of having to report what the woman says is a major violation of patient confidentiality. But the motivation behind the campaign is to use this as an opening wedge to start an abortion ban in Georgia. Secondly, I believe that it is tied to trying to build a broader base of support for the right in Georgia in communities of color, to use abortion, like we see nationally, as a wedge issue to try to drive a wedge into the African-American and using sex-selective abortions to the extent that they say that they exist, because we can't even prove that they do, to drive a wedge into the Asian-American community to try to use social issues to bring more people into a right-wing agenda. And, of course, when you look at the websites of these campaign sponsors of these billboards, they oppose gun control. They oppose a lot of things that you would think they wouldn't oppose. But that's the other agenda. And so it's really important that we come together as a reproductive justice community to not only stop this here in Georgia, but we feel that Georgia, since it has the largest number of black elected officials in the country, is really a test case for them to roll this campaign out and seek to replicate it in other urban cities in Alabama, in Detroit, and other places where they can try to achieve those same goals. And so it's compelled us as African-American women and as South Asian women to come together to work with the pro-choice community through Planned Parenthood, Feminist Women's Health Center, I forgot to mention them earlier, and a national group called Generations Ahead to really stop this legislation in its tracks and to then come up with a proactive response that defends the right of black women to make decisions about our bodies, that defends the right of South Asian women to make decisions about their bodies, so that we can head off other attempts to use us to undermine abortion rights.
Hi, this is Dr. Melissa Gilliam. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So, Loretta, thank you so much for those comments. I think what I'll plan to do is place this issue more in its clinical and public health context. And while the suggestion that this is a larger conspiracy is absurd. I think it points to a very important fact, which is that the abortion rate is much higher in Black communities and among Black women. And it's really critical that we use that fact not as a way to either judge or castigate African-American women and African-American communities, but a time to ask critical questions, which is why are these rates higher? To give you some numbers, because as a researcher and a Guttmacher board member, I like numbers, that rate really is higher. A Black woman is almost four times as likely as a white woman to have an abortion. And when you look at that, it is because there is a higher rate of unintended pregnancy among African-American women, which is basically about three times as high as among white women. And as a result of that, there is a much higher overall rate of abortion, about 49 per 1,000 women who are African-American compared to 13 who are white. Now, this, in some ways, this is an overall decrease in the numbers. For example, the number of teen pregnancies have dropped among African Americans over the past decade, even though we know more recently there's been a slight uptick. But if you start with just those numbers, you have to say that these are not really a reason to judge Black women, but they're more a marker of what I think are larger health disparities among African Americans in general. One of the reasons that we have such a high number of unintended pregnancy is due to differential use of contraception among African-American women. In 2002, about 15% of Black women who are at risk for unintended pregnancy were sexually active, fertile, but not wanting to be pregnant. About 15% of those were not practicing contraception compared to 12% of Latino and 9% of white. And many of these women are disproportionately low income. They're unable to afford prescription birth control methods, and they're unable to afford or have access to highly effective contraceptives over extended periods of time due to the fact that many contraceptives have very high upfront costs. But if we take a step back, even in larger areas of reproductive health, we still see these exact same health disparities for African-American women. So, for example, if we look at rates of HIV/AIDS for African-American women, those are also much higher. In fact, in 2007, the African-American adolescents and adults were 10 times more likely to have an AIDS diagnosis compared to whites, and nearly three times the rate for Hispanics. We can see similar statistics if we look at diabetes, if we look at cancer, if we look at the frequency of diagnosis, as well as the access to care, as well as the outcomes for African American compared to white women. So I think this framework is very different from the insidious and conspiracy framework that we've been discussing, but we need to put abortion in a larger health context and a larger health disparities framework so that we can see that these are actually systematic disparities that have happened throughout the area of public health and personal health for African Americans and African American communities. And as I think many of us know, that when a pregnancy is desired, it is the most wonderful thing. And given that in so many African American communities, families are valued and are valued so highly, which is one of the reasons why I think this particular line billboards has had such traction, because family and family values are so important. And so I think that when Black women are pregnant and are unable to or decide and need to make the choice to terminate pregnancies, then we have to start to say, why are there such high rates of unintended pregnancy? And I think it directly reflects the other high rates and disparities in healthcare for African American women overall.
Thank you, Melissa. This is Vanessa Cullins, VP for Medical Affairs, Planned Parenthood Federation of America. I'm going to speak to the issue from the lens of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Now, the situation that is developing in Georgia clearly is a forerunner to what the antis are planning for the entire country, as Loretta mentioned previously. Quite frankly, the antis want to destroy Planned Parenthood, destroy Planned Parenthood's credibility within the African-American community, and they really want to outlaw abortion. Planned Parenthood helps all individuals who seek our services make informed decisions about their reproductive health care, regardless of gender, race, economic status, religion, or sexual orientation. Now, Planned Parenthood is committed to high-quality health care, and we believe that every person must have access to high-quality and affordable health care in a confidential setting from the preferred provider for that particular individual. Now, ensuring access is clearly a critical step towards eliminating the health care disparities that Dr. Gilliam just spoke of. And as Dr. Gilliam mentioned, women of color are disproportionately adversely affected by the current health care system that exists in this country. Clearly, the health care system in this country is failing women of color, especially African American women. And this is evident again in the high rates of unintended pregnancy and chronic disease that Dr. Gilliam has spoken to. For women of color, you find that we tend to be disproportionately uninsured or underinsured. Hence, one of the mission, part of the mission for Planned Parenthood is that we provide service to uninsured and underinsured men and women in this country. Yet, we clearly do not target on the basis of race. Again, the focus is on quality preventive health care services that are accessible to all clients who seek our services. This fact is evident in the fact that abortion really makes up a very small percentage of the health care that is provided by Planned Parenthood. And in fact, more than 90% of the health care provided at Planned Parenthood health centers is really preventive medicine. And it is this preventive medicine and life-saving screenings for cancer and chronic diseases, which is most needed by members within the African American community, the Hispanic community, and also in the Caucasian community. As you're well aware, the health care of Americans in this country compared to women in similarly developed countries is actually abysmal. And so we really should be focusing on the fact that we need a health care system that is going to enable access to services that are preventive in nature, including contraception, services that will allow women to not experience as many unintended pregnancies. I think it's very telling that when you look at the total fertility rate for African-American women, it is 2.0. The total fertility rate is the average number of children that a woman will have in her lifetime. So it's 2 for African-American women. It's also 2 for Caucasian women. And when you look at Hispanic women, depending on the country of origin and the degree of assimilation, it varies between 2 to a little over 3. For example, if you look at Cuban women, their total fertility rate is approximately 2. whereas you look at the Mexican American women, the total fertility rate is over 3. The point that I'm trying to make is that women globally decide to limit their families once they have opportunities of education and opportunities to participate in economic and civic society. And so the issue at hand truly is one of healthcare disparities that prevent African-American women from being able to prevent unintended pregnancy. I think we could open it up to questions, Jody.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thanks to all three of our speakers for the comments. And also on behalf of our Philip, if you wouldn't mind going ahead and then.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question or comment comes from the line of Diane Lupe.
Hello, ladies. I'm here in Atlanta. I know the bill that Dr. Ross mentioned, which prohibits targeting African-American communities for abortion services, and it mentions specifically solicitation. How do they define that, and do any abortion clinics truly ever solicit business? I'm just at a loss as to what this might mean. And also on that same topic of the Georgia legislation, there are some anti-abortion legislators who are against this legislation, I believe on the grounds that if you say it's illegal to target a black community for your abortion services, you are implying that it's legal to promote abortion services. So I wonder if that particular nuance dooms this particular bill.
Thank you for your question. First of all, one of the more troubling aspects about the bill is that it has no real definition for what constitutes solicitation. So merely listing yourself in the yellow pages, is that solicitation? Any kind of advertising of your services, is that solicitation? Because this is what normal businesses do in order to make their services known to the clients that they hope to attract. And so the fact that the bill is so vague on the definition of solicitation would have a definite chilling effect on whether or not providers felt safe in even saying that their services were available for fear that they would be subjected to the RICO or racketeering statutes claiming that they are soliciting and coercing designated women for abortion services. So that's another aspect of the proposed legislation, is that it's saying that two groups of women, women who may be seeking abortions allegedly for race or sex selection, and we can interpret that for black and South and Asian women, should be discriminated against because they would be asked a level of questions and some assumptions made about why they're coming to the clinic that white women may not be suspected of unless they suspect that that white woman is giving birth to a biracial child. So it gets really complicated. Now, the white legislators who are definitely anti-abortion, who oppose the bill, they oppose it on the ground, on two grounds, they've said. One, it doesn't go far enough. So what if the bill did stop abortions in the African-American or the Asian-American community? Does that mean that it's all right for white women to have them? And so they're arguing that. But interestingly, they're also arguing that the bill is unconstitutional. So he's actually, some of them are actually joining our argument on the lack of constitutional rigor that this legislation has right now. And, of course, we are concerned if you say it's unconstitutional, they may come back and try to make something even more constitutional. But it's not legal for a state legislature to craft a law that makes a legal right in America illegal.
Anyone else have any comments on that before we take another call?
No.
Next call?
And your next question or comment comes from the line of Cheryl Wettstein.
Hi, Cheryl Wettstein with the Washington Times. I was hoping to have one or more of the speakers respond to YouTube videos that have been put out that I guess they have people saying on it from Planned Parenthood that, sure, we'd be glad to take money if, you know, you use it to abort black babies and other sort of, you know, planted attacks on Planned Parenthood. And I'd like to hear a more stronger response to those kind of tactics that are out there as well.
This is Vanessa Collins, Planned Parenthood Federation of America. The situation that you're referring to are the Lila Rose sting attacks that have been occurring off and on for the past couple of years by the Lila Rose anti-choice group. This particular group makes race-baiting phone calls to various affiliate staff, and on a couple of occasions they were able to document staff that clearly did not handle the calls correctly, in that these staff were thrown off by the race baiting, and the staff were subsequently reprimanded, and if they were allowed to stay on, they underwent retraining. In response to these Lila Rose incidences, the national office and affiliates conducted their own mystery calls, and in addition to that, set up retraining for all affiliates. Staff across the country, they come in contact with the public, especially development staff. And this, I want to really point out and reiterate that Planned Parenthood does not tolerate racism and does not accept racially motivated donations. And when we are presented with any evidence that this may be occurring, we act swiftly to correct that. So the issue with the few tapes that documented that there was inappropriate response by staff, the swift response was reprimand and retraining. I want to point out that there have only been a couple of tapes that have been released to YouTube. They're playing the same episodes over and over again, and quite frankly, the tapes have actually been edited in many situations. So clearly, in some instances, there were statements that were spliced together to have it appear that the employee was indeed getting ready to accept a racist donation.
So even what's being shown on YouTube isn't, it's been doctored. It sounds like that's what you're saying.
The tapes have clearly been edited.
Okay.
Yet we took you know, the issue of the tape very seriously from the standpoint of the national office and the entire federation, and have taken steps to make sure that employees clearly understand that, first of all, the race baiting thing was going on, and that in no way do we accept racially motivated donations.
Very good. Thank you very much.
And your next question.
You're very welcome.
Your next question or comment comes from the line of Scott Ritter.
Hi, yes. Just going back to, I guess, one of the first remarks from Ms. Ross. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. There's so much noise in the line, I can't tell. I'm just curious, what claims in the Georgia campaign, the billboard campaign, which claims are most upsetting? Which claims are, because I hear that supposedly the claims are that the billboard campaign itself are making false assertions. So could you enlighten us as to what things that are being said that we're able to then counter?
Okay. Well, unpacking the entire campaign is like unraveling a plate of spaghetti noodles. The wording of the campaign is offensive. Black children are an endangered species. To many of us, compares black children to exotic animals. Our children are not animals. The fact that black children are in danger is something we can actually discuss and debate, but we locate that source of danger from the conditions that they face due to health disparities and racism and gun violence and toxic neighborhoods and all of those issues that we, of course, talk about all the time, because Sister Song is an organization. We fight for the right to have a child as well as to not have a child, and the right to parent the children once they're here. And so we don't like the fact that they are ignoring the very real dangers that our children experience, that they're here, and that they oppose us when it comes to fighting for better food or ending gun violence or better education system for children that are here, and instead want to pivot and create a campaign of shaming of black women. And we would argue that African-American women have been the foundational cornerstone for the sustenance of African-American families, as opposed to being the chief threat to those families. And
right,
so we
but that
don't,
doesn't answer the question, though. I'm sorry, no, that doesn't answer the question. What claims, because the conference today is supposed to be about the racism that doesn't exist, so what are the claims that are being made on the website? I think it's toomanyaborted.com. What claims are they making that are false? Are their statistics wrong? Wherein lies any of the falsehoods being purported by, was it Georgia Right to Life and the Radiance Foundation?
Well, first of all, I've already spoken to the fact that they are claiming that there is intentional race-based solicitation of abortion in the black community. That is false. It is false that black women are the dupes of abortion providers. It is false that the majority of clinics are located in African-American neighborhoods in Georgia. Of the 15 clinics, only 4 are in majority black neighborhoods. It is false that Planned Parenthood or Margaret Sanger sought to exterminate the black race through the support for family planning of the campaign. In fact, around the country where there were organized black women's movements in the 1930s and 40s, black women went to Sanger asking her to place clinics in black communities. So I can string together a number of falsehoods that are...
But that's not what they're claiming. They don't claim that it's trying to exterminate the whole black race. I'm looking at the website right now. They're not claiming to, that it's exterminating the whole black race. What they're saying is that poor blacks are being targeted. So what is false about their claims? Is the Negro Project not a real, was that not really a real endeavor in 1939? And if it was not targeting blacks, why was it called the Negro Project?
Let me unpack your question a little bit, and maybe my fellow panelists can also speak to it. When you talk about who accesses public health in this society, you're talking about, for the most part, low-income people as a whole, because middle-class and upper-class women go to private doctors to obtain those same services. So, first of all, you cannot say that because there are reproductive health services as a public health service that low-income people use, that targets low-income people. That solipsism in and of itself is incorrect. Now, did they have a Negro Project? Yes, they did. In 1939, Margaret Sanger organized prominent leaders of the African-American community, like W.E.B. Du Bois and Adam Clayton Powell, Jr., to talk about how to get reproductive health services and family planning to rural African Americans who had the least access to these services. And it was with their support and encouragement, and actually often at their behest, that she helped design what was called a Negro Project to deliver services to rural African Americans who did not have those services.
Philip, I think we will move on to make sure that we can everyone a chance to ask questions.
All right. And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And we have a follow-up question from the line of Diane Lupe.
Thank you. Dr. Ross and others, you had has this campaign in Atlanta had any impact on abortion clinics? Have you noticed that black women are reacting to these billboards? Are they coming into the clinics and saying anything? Can you hear me?
I'll answer from the standpoint of Planned Parenthood.
Is this Dr. Ross?
We have...
That's Dr. Collins.
Okay. Yeah, this is Dr. Collins. We have not noticed a change in the number or character of women who are seeking our services. Again, abortion is really less than 5% of the services that we provide, and our mission has always been to serve those who are underserved. The underserved in this country are those folks that are uninsured or underinsured. And so traditionally, we have provided services for low-income African Americans, Caucasians, Asians, and other people of color that are not served well by our current healthcare system. If we ever get to the point of universal insurance, then perhaps there will be easier access to services across the board for all men and women in this country. And at that time, we can see whether or not there is a change in the providers that people decide to access. Currently, at Planned Parenthood Federation of America, we provide quality preventive health care and screening services that comprises over 90% of what we do, and the clientele that come to us have expressed satisfaction with the services we provide.
And can I just add, this is Loretta Ross, that in Woman on the Street interviews that several reporters have conducted as they followed this story, They have yet to find one woman who, number one, is not outraged, and number two, has going to change her mind about whether or not she maintains control over planning her family.
This is Melissa Gilliam. Here in Chicago, we're not seeing a large effect from this actual campaign. I think the bigger issue for us has been issues to do with the economy and access to contraception. So my concern is that we'll have even more unintended pregnancies in places like the south side of Chicago where I've been.
And the question is, even if they find that one person, what will that exactly prove? You can always find one anecdotal story to prove or to substantiate what is fact, not true.
I want to do just a quick time check here. This is Jody to ask if Drs. Gilliam and Collins need to leave or are able to stay on for a couple of more questions.
I can stay on for a couple of more questions.
Okay. I can stay on for 5 minutes.
Okay. So, Philip, do we have any other callers asking questions? And may I ask people to identify their media outlet as well as their own name?
Yes, and your next question or comment comes from the line of Shireen Mitchell.
Hi, this is Shireen Mitchell. Dr. Ross, I guess I want to ask the question about the claim of the billboard of endangered species. Is that, in your mind, a fact that is being claimed that is part of this campaign?
I'd actually like to defer to Dr. Gilliam because she has the statistics on black female fertility, one of which she spoke about earlier. It is hard to claim that we're an endangered species when we still have rather high black fertility. Melissa, do you want to address that?
That as well as the title of species versus children.
So I think Dr. Ross address the issue of the word species and how that is an offensive term. But in terms of birth rates, one of the things that we haven't seen is a decrease in births. I think one of the things that we've been, especially among teenagers, I think that one of the things that we were very proud of, I think, as a public health community, was the decline in teen pregnancy in the past decade. And these were very significant declines. But in both, now we have data for both 2005, 2006 that shows that the teen birth rate has actually increased, and that this is particularly high among African American teens, and maybe not the youngest teens, but of other age groups. The issues in terms of fertility actually often occur in older African American women because of disproportionate rates of chlamydia and other tubal scarring diseases. And so that is more an issue of infertility rather than terminating pregnancy.
And this is Vanessa Collins again. I want to take us back to what I think is really, you know, the telling story in terms of total fertility rate in the African American community. When you look at the issue of births and births to African American women, we tend to have our births earlier in life compared to Caucasian women. You see the same thing when you're looking at Hispanic women. And yet our total fertility rate is 2, like Caucasian women. So this clearly points to the fact that we are having children at a rate such that we can sustain the African American community in much the same way that Caucasians are bearing children at a rate to sustain the Caucasian population in this country. The issue is an issue of timing of pregnancy and being able to prevent unintended pregnancy through contraception.
Any other questions?
Your next question or comment comes from the line of Sarah Rubin with The Atlantic.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Sarah with The Atlantic Monthly, and I'm wondering just in terms of public exposure from the Tim Tebow ad about a month ago, which to my knowledge was the last time that the pro-choice community was very publicly active in advocating against a particular advertising campaign. If you've seen any impact just on, you know, donations or what people are saying or how people are wanting to get involved?
Well, as one of the organizations responding to the organizing on the ground, if the intent was to get people's attention, the billboards have certainly done that. And Sister Song and all of our partner organizations have seen an increase in traffic over our website and calls and offers of support. For example, we've heard from many ministers who want to come and to say that they support us. We've heard from celebrities who want to support us. And so it is starting these conversations. Now, what is hopefully a coincidence is that the same CBS that sponsored, that provided the medium for the Tebow ads is also the provider of the billboards. Mm-hmm. And our appeals to take the billboards down because there's no, that they appear to violate what they said was a policy about mentioning the word abortion, which is the excuse that they used to turn down ads from the Feminist Women's Health Center a couple of years ago, have fallen on deaf ears. They've gotten a wave of phone calls and emails demanding that the billboards come down because they are deeply offensive to African-American women in particular and the African-American community in general, and they've been resistant. They've basically said the billboards are going to stay up until the end of March and ain't nothing you can do about it. And so I wonder if there is a bias at CBS that is manifested in it being caught, maybe coincidentally, in two controversies over women's human rights and abortion.
Thank you.
This is Becca Gilliam. You know, it's certainly at the level of the anecdote, but I've certainly seen an increase in the interest in this topic. Not one as sort of a sense this is another thread and we something that we need to rally around, but also just a real interest in how is this viewed in these communities? How is this issue viewed in these communities? And people thinking this is something that we need to address and that this is a place where public opinion might need to be addressed and questioned again. So I think there is a potential that this is almost serving as an additional rallying cry for a choice movement.
This is Vanessa Kellers. I'm unfortunately going to have to sign off, and I thank all of you all for your questions. And Jody, thank you so much for organizing this. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Collins, for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
And Jody, I'll sign off as well. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, too. Loretta, I don't know if you have time for another one or two questions.
I can go until our scheduled time of 3 o'clock. So,
okay,
yeah.
Great. Thank you, Loretta. Thanks so much. Philip, if you have any other questions, Dr. Ross is still available for the call.
All right. And your next question or comment comes from the line of Catherine Joyce.
Hi, thanks. Catherine Joyce, I'm writing for Public Eye. Dr. Ross, could you elaborate on what you said earlier, that the bill in Georgia is a test case?
I believe that one of the things that the right wing desperately wants is a broader base of support in communities of color, not only to support its agenda about regaining power, but also to thwart the Obama agenda about implementing things like health care reform and immigration reform and reforming the financial institutions and climate change. I actually see this as an opening salvo, because if the right can deliver this bill in the state of Georgia as a successful trial balloon or test case, I think it will embolden them to believe that around the country they can drive a wedge into the African American community and into other communities of color. And we should mention that we have gotten a report that a Republican Latino in Arizona is considering also introducing a bill on race and sex selection in Arizona, targeting the Latino community. So it is a clear strategy of wedge politics in communities of color. But it's not about the health and well-being of these communities. What's ironic about this particular scenario we're dealing with is that the white Republicans who a generation ago were against desegregation and promoted miscegenation laws forbidding interracial relationships are now saying that they want to save the products of interracial relationships, to save the children of interracial relationships. And so this cynical about faith is nothing more than a part of a strategy to build a base for support for right-wing causes in communities of color, and not so incidentally set the women's movement back several decades.
Thank you.
And you have a follow-up question from the line of Scott Ritter with Black America Web.
Yeah, I feel like in order to have a believable, incredible counter, that your side needs to also have the facts on your side. I don't feel like it's the case. Just what you said earlier, trying to tie CBS Tim Tebow's ad, for instance, which the ad wasn't a pro-life ad at all. It was kind of nebulous, actually. And so it's weird to me that you want to interject conspiracy there with CBS's Tim Tebow ad and the CBS Outdoor billboards, tying them together, and yet at the same time decrying the feigned conspiracy in this billboard. And I'm just trying to get to some actual substance here where, you know, is it not true that 57 or 58% of all abortions in Georgia are on African-American women, although they comprise only 30% of the population? And if that is true, if that's statistically true, I assume that the stats on here from the state of Georgia, I just have one question for you, because what I've heard the whole time, and this is the argument, that is the health care disparity, but how do you account for the fact that Hispanics are uninsured at 38% and African Americans at 19%, yet Hispanics have half the number of abortions? So how do you counter that? Because if it's about health care disparity, Hispanics have far less health coverage than Black Americans. This is according to the U.S. Census Bureau. So then what do you recommend to overcome that statistic?
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, I'd like to invite you to contact us post-interview so I can do a bigger follow-up, because we've only got a few more minutes left. But first of all, let me just clear up a couple of things. I did not claim a CBS conspiracy. I use very intentionally the word coincidence. So I'm not going to launch a new conspiracy when I'm trying to counter one on my own. So don't put that word in my mouth. Secondly, the statistics about 57% of the abortions is not correct. I was told by people who do research on abortions in Georgia that the real statistic may be around 16% of Black pregnancies in Georgia end in abortion. So the statistics that are out there as if more than half our children are being aborted are simply not true. And these are statistics that come from the Georgia Department of Health, from the Centers for Disease Control. Those are the reliable sources for statistical evidence that we use rather than overstating or understating the case. back to the question of health care disparities. One of the things that we find, because I have not necessarily looked at the comparison between what's happening with Latinos and African Americans, because I focus very heavily on black abortion, which is my field, and that is that a lot of people, as Dr. Gilliam said, are not contracepting properly or effectively, are told that even to inquire about sex education or confess their sexual activities to their family, to their church, this is problematic in the black community. So we're not giving our young people the information they need to prevent unplanned pregnancy. We're not making access to contraceptives and things easy for them. They have economic barriers. And then one thing we don't even talk about, 25% of young girls in the African American community are also subjected to sexual violence. So until you intersect all of those issues, you don't get a real idea of what's going on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. First of all, Brother, thanks so much for the time and energy and for taking time on the call today. We're at the end of our allotted time, and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. And I want to just reiterate one point made earlier in addition to the eloquent things that Loretta had just said. One is that we're talking about different total fertility and wanted fertility rates. And, you know, when women have fertility, they have unintended or unwanted pregnancy, they will oftentimes have an abortion. And I just want to thank all of the different folks on the call today for joining us at RH Reality and all. Thanks for taking the time. If you have any questions to follow up with, we will put you in contact with the folks to schedule interviews with each of the experts. So we'll have we also will have an MP3 of the call available at www.rhrealitycheck.org. And we thank you for joining us.
And this concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.